Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. We went out a little bit before, you know, with Ben Harper's Forever. This is his birthday. Of course, we are always played the musical sounds of folks whose birthday and death took, or major musical events happened on this day. And we are now about to have a conversation with the folks from the Open Society Institute Baltimore, celebrating their 15th anniversary. They've worked a lot over the last 15 years to change, to create systemic change in our systems around criminal justice, education, and more. Drug rehabilitation in this community. And we are joined by Diana Morris, Director of OSI Baltimore. Good to have you in the studio, Diana. It's been a while.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. Glad to be here.
And Judge Andre Davis.
Good morning, Mark. Good
to see
you.
Former Chair of the Board, still on the OSI Board, and Circuit Judge for the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit. Good to see you, Andre.
Thanks.
And y'all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at SteinerShow at gmail.com. Tweet us at Mark Steiner, jump on the Facebook pages, whatever you like, 410-319-8888. So, Diana, let's talk about this, because you've been at the helm for the entire span of time. And I'm curious, I mean, when this first started, George Soros, who created the Open Society Institute, dedicated kind of his urban experiment in change to Baltimore, Maryland. So they invested a lot of money in this. And we all start out with X amount of expectations, then we hit reality and 15 years of work. So talk about the beginning and how these 15 years have changed for you.
You know, initially, Mark, when we had this tremendous opportunity, thanks to George Soros, we thought we might just be here for 5 years. And that is just a blink of time. But I think Baltimore was a great choice because it's a city that resembles so many other urban cities across the country. So this was a really good place to learn about what the dynamics are right here in Baltimore and then share them with other cities around the country. I will say that because we thought we had such a short period of time, we actually started working, I think, in a pretty good way, which was that we right away realized we had to work in partnership with others. And that included not only the wonderful nonprofit advocates across the city, but also government. Government's where the big bucks are. It's where we can really make change happen. So right from the start, we developed those partnerships. And I think that was really wonderful. So even now, 15 years later, we know that that's really important ingredient.
Andre, you've seen this from almost the beginning as well, being on the board and former chairman of the board and still rolling with it even in your busy time as a federal judge.
I was never chair of the board.
I thought you were chair. I apologize.
I've been chair of a few boards, but not
this one. Okay, sorry.
And in fact, we didn't have a chair for a long time. It was a very communal operation. When I was invited very early on, of course, as you know my work, Mark, I was very drawn to the efforts focused on drug and substance abuse treatment, increasing the opportunities for those who want help to get that help in the city. And also the offender reentry issue, which is something you talk about a lot and mm-hmm. that we're all very concerned about. So it was an immediate magnet for me to be involved at something of a grassroots level, but also at a higher level. In addition to the partnership that Diana mentioned, what really distinguishes OSI is the extraordinary staff who are subject matter experts and process experts and who therefore bring so much more than just grant funding to the extraordinary entrepreneurs and nonprofits around the city who do the work that we support. So it's been an exciting 14 years for me.
So I've been involved in and out of this a lot in terms of the issues you've raised and bringing stuff to the airwaves over the last 15 years. And I'm wondering your own kind of analysis of what has been accomplished. Let's take one of the areas we talked about, which I know has been one of the several mainstays. You can talk about them all, Diane, in a moment, but of the Open Society Institute Baltimore, which is criminal justice reform. And it's, you know, been one of those areas in government that's been very difficult to change, to move, to turn, to create a system of real equity and who we incarcerate and how we treat people and people returning. So I'm curious, what do you think has been accomplished? And where do you think it has to go? Where are we with it all?
You know, we have some really significant accomplishments here in the state. And in the same breath, I'll say there's still a ton more to do. But recidivism is down by a third. So that's measured by, you know, how many people who are let out of prison end up coming back within a 3-year period. And the state now has it down by a third. And that's because of really recognizing that most people come out of prison and back to the community. And we have to do something while they're still incarcerated and immediately upon their reentry. And so more and more there are some programs that really give people the kind of help they need so that they can succeed out in the community. And that's beginning to work. We also recognize that Maryland was not granting parole to numbers at the same rate as other states. And that's something that we've been able to work closely with the Parole Board and the Department of Corrections. And I think we're now at a pace that makes a lot more sense because it turns out that research shows how long you're incarcerated has nothing to do with how well you'll do when you get outside.
Precisely.
And you see that every day.
Absolutely. How long you're incarcerated really is not correlated to how well you do. It's a host of other things, and OSI Baltimore has been focused on those other things. In addition to adult criminal justice, we've also been very active in juvenile criminal justice, and I think we've had a major impact in advocating for policies and funding programs that try to address that in a very meaningful way.
I mean, we have a lot of young people now who've also gotten involved, and it's just really fantastic to see that kind of youth engagement and youth doing the research. Mm-hmm. And that's been something that's been consistent for Open Society across the board, whether it's the Baltimore Urban Debate League, whose board actually Andre did chair.
You did chair that board. Right? That's right. You did chair that board. Yes, I remember that. Yes.
And now with the youth jail, you know, a lot of young people joined a lot of older advocates in saying this does not make sense. We do not need to be creating this very expensive jail for youth who are charged as adults. There are other approaches, and research shows that these kids, many of them, 70% of them, are released anyway, so they aren't even ending up being sentenced. So we don't need to be spending millions of dollars on the jail. And in any case, the best place for them is to be with other young people and with the adults who've been trained to serve young people. And that's the kind of message that we're trying to get across, that these young people have different brain development. We got to respond to that. Kids do make mistakes, but kids also learn. And we have to put them in the environment that they're going to be able to come out and as much as possible stay in the community. And so that's been a big emphasis with our juvenile justice program, to keep kids in the community, give them the services they need, and as much as possible intervene earlier. Just mm-hmm. like your last part of the program was talking about all the excitement about the new schools, it's those schools that need to be really engaging for the kids so they stay there and do well.
So if you really think about the 15 years that have just passed through with Open Society Institute Baltimore and where you plan to change things and move ahead, I mean, in education, you're still deeply involved in education and criminal justice reform, your Open Society Institute Fellows Program, which has been remarkable. We've interviewed dozens and dozens of those fellows and worked closely with them over the years, which we'll talk about in a minute. So what's the agenda next besides trying to raise the money to keep going, which I know is part of your agenda?
Well, we've been really thrilled. I will say we have been thrilled by the numbers of individuals and foundations and corporations that have invested in our work. And just as you see with Andre, our board has always been a local board, and the board really guides our work. So yes, we have the great advantage of all the resources that our national and international Open Society Foundations gives to us. But really what's important is having the local leadership, and that's where our local board comes in. We're really thrilled with some of the areas right now. I mean, we have from the very beginning thought that we had to work on drug addiction treatment.
Right.
You know, this untreated addiction is really dragging us all down. And, of course, drugs are used by people equally, regardless of race and class. It's just that people who are poor end up getting arrested, and those who are not often find their way into treatment because they have better insurance. All that's changing now. We have this amazing opportunity because of the Affordable Care Act. And before that, actually, here in Maryland, we've had primary adult care, and we've been able to work with the advocates and with the state so that there's going to be a really good addiction benefit there. And so people are going to be able to treat their addiction like you do diabetes or hypertension. It's a chronic disease. You need to have treatment. But you will be able to go to a doctor's office or a clinic and have all of your health care needs met, and you'll be insured. And this is just going to be a huge difference for people to have the means to get the treatment.
So just a point of information. So most people have not heard this before, so I'm asking. So how does the Affordable Health Care Act feed into that? I mean, how does that benefit people who are trying to fight their own addiction?
Well, we know that it takes a lot of courage and energy to decide to make that decision to go into treatment.
Right.
And when you're finally ready to go get treatment, to then have a lot of financial barriers really is discouraging. So here in Maryland, we're going to have expanded Medicaid. All the people who are on primary adult care will automatically get it, and other people will be able to sign up. And one of the things that's fantastic is that there were 10 kinds of treatment that were included in what's called the essential benefit. And one of them is a really good addiction treatment benefit. And, you know, we've always felt that everyone has to be treated individually, just like you would for any kind of disease. So for one person, they might want to have buprenorphine, another person methadone, another person some other kind of treatment protocol. All that's going to be available now. And they'll be able to go to the community clinic, a private doctor. So depending upon how much money they make, they'll either have expanded Medicaid or they can go into the exchange and figure out what policy is the best for them.
And Mark, what's been so exciting is how integrated the work of OSI has been over the years. We all know that the problem of substance abuse and criminal justice are inextricably intertwined. If we can address the problem of substance abuse, then we absolutely begin to address problems of criminal justice in so many ways. And OSI saw that very early on. We don't want to exaggerate this at all, but the availability of treatment as a result of OSI's work over the last decade and a half has grown by orders of magnitude. We don't take sole credit for this. As Diana said, it's been a series of partnerships at the local and state level. But as you know, as a Baltimorean, and you and I used to be in the same Cub Scout troop in East Baltimore,
right.
Baltimore was the heroin capital of the world.
Right.
I mean, it really was. And so what we've been able to do through our funding, through the work of our staff, and through these leveraged partnerships is really increase our closeness to the ideal of treatment on demand. That's what we're moving toward. And I hope we get there in my lifetime. Perhaps we won't. But
I hope we get there in your lifetime.
I hope we get there in my lifetime.
I hope we do.
And what's going to happen through what's happening at the federal level, at the state level, and through the work of nonprofits like OSI is that we're moving towards that goal, and people are going to get treatment when they need it, when they're ready for it. And here's another thing very quickly. Any judge knows, and most people in the criminal justice system knows, that a person who goes into treatment is likely to fail more than once. That's a given.
Right.
And so what we've moved toward now, I think, a system where we understand that. It used to be that a judge who had a person on probation, as soon as they produced the dirty urine, they were back in jail. And over the years, judges have gained the knowledge that that's not the way to go. And so with drug courts and treatment availability increases, I'm very hopeful that both the substance abuse problem that plagues our community as well as the criminal justice problems that are associated with that will see a significant decrease.
Folks, you can join us here at 410-319-8888 as we look at the 15 years of OSI's work in this community. And I would just add on to what Andre was just saying, that anybody who has attempted to stop smoking cigarettes understands what addiction means and how many times one can fall backwards.
That's right.
And have that little cigarette that puts you right back to where you started. So that's very real, because that addiction is no different than any other addiction. This is a personal example people can think about.
410-319-8888.
So I know that it's sold out for tomorrow, but I'm curious what the panoply of guests and people you have coming in through the day have to say about what you're trying to say about OSI and what you're saying about where it has to go.
Well, you know, tomorrow we're going to have this wonderful event at Center Stage called Big Change Baltimore. And it is sold out. We're really excited. We have about 550 people coming. But the good news is that if anyone wants to listen to these speakers, they can live stream it by going to bigchangebaltimore.org. So from 1 o'clock to 1 to 6 p.m., people can join us. And there are going to be fantastic speakers. We have Pedro Noguera. He's an example of someone who's going to talk about the role of race and when it comes to how children are doing in school and looking at what responsibilities adults have to try to keep kids in school and not push them out through discipline policies. And, you know, this is an example where Baltimore has just made fantastic progress. You know, it used to be when Open Society first looked at this issue, we had something like 26,000 kids being suspended. And now right. we're around 8,600. Well, that is a huge difference. And the other thing that's pretty cool is that Baltimore is actually leading the state right now. The State Board of Education, once it realizes that the kind of disparities we're seeing where kids who are kids of color or kids who are disabled are being suspended at much higher rates across the whole state. And Maryland wants to address this, and they're looking to Baltimore as one way to really understand how to proceed. So we're going to have Pedro Noguera. I think he's going to be able to put our work here in the context of the rest of the country. He is coming. He's a professor at New York University, and he really is just a very dynamic speaker. So I think people are going to really enjoy him.
And Sherilyn Eiffel is speaking.
Yes.
Our own Sherilyn, yes.
Our own Sherilyn, exactly, who is now, of course, the head of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund.
Correct.
Huge position, Thurgood Marshall's chair. Yes. You've got Van Jones is coming.
Yeah, Van Jones, and you know, he is now going to be a co-host of a new program that CNN's
right.
bringing back,
right.
Crossfire. But he also has been the head of something called Rebuild the Dream, and he is another person who has done a lot of work and is able to really talk about what it's like to be at the community level and thinking nationally at the same time. He was probably one of the first people to start talking about green jobs years and years ago. And I think right now he's very involved and has, of course, been at the White House as well. And he's really trying to integrate how the business community can work at the community level and at the city level to really create new opportunity.
We're really excited about this.
Yes, some interesting people coming.
You know, you've heard of street festivals and yeah. music festivals and poetry festivals. This is an idea festival, a forward-looking view at what the work has meant and achieved and what it can achieve in the future.
Now, the awesome people speaking there is Dr. Lawrence Brown here from Morgan State University, who I think is a really up-and-coming young thinker and activist in this community and does incredible work as a guest on the show all the time. And two of your former OSI fellows, who also appear on the show a lot, Bashi Rose and Michelle, will be there speaking at the events as well.
Yeah, a little comedy, a little art. We're going to really mix it up. So I think there's going to be
Cyrus Chestnut's
fantastic...
going to play. We'll also be on the show this Thursday. So, yeah.
It's going to be fantastic. I think it's going to be great. But, you know, we're pretty excited about where Baltimore has come. You know, in 15 years, we see huge changes. And our job has been to try to identify what are the levers of change, where can we get the biggest change by really concentrating our resources, not just money, but really bringing together people thinking together, acting together for change. And we can see real differences now. You know, our graduation rates are up, our suspension rates are down, our prison population is coming down too. So, I mean, we have indicators that are all going in the right direction, and we monitor them carefully. We bring in ideas from other places, but we're pretty excited about the kind of momentum we have now. And we are hoping that with more and more business people coming into this and realizing that this is how we can actually improve quality of life for all of us, we're going to actually get even more push.
So, and I mentioned earlier that some of the people speaking are the OSI fellows, and that's a program I think that's been a pretty amazing. How many years has it been now for OSI fellows?
All 15 years.
All 15 years?
Yeah,
is it all 15 years?
Yes. I mean, we're just going to announce our 16th class next week. Pretty exciting. 12 new fellows.
And so, and that's a program that I think that an 18-month-long program where young community community activists, people who are engaged in really changing the life of community on some level or another, are supported and then come together as a group to kind of really wrestle with the issues facing Baltimore, which I think that's a really critical piece.
It's a very critical piece, Mark. I've been privileged to serve now for about 5 or 6 years on the selection committee of the fellowship program. And I tell you, it's just absolutely jaw-dropping how much talent we have in this city. Committed people, as you say, young people, some not so young, who come up with these incredibly creative, meaningful ideas to affect people's lives. And so I'm very excited about this upcoming class, as I was excited in the last several years. Really tremendous people who add value to the city in so many ways.
We've heard from some of those who have been selected. I guess you can't all we can't see who they are at this moment, but we've heard from some of them who we really encourage to kind of apply, and really happy that they're going to be in this class, and they'll be on the show to talk about what their plans are once they get publicly announced.
You know, this is an idea, this is an example where we basically provide the risk capital. These are people,
right.
You know, we take a risk. We think it's our job to take risks, obviously calculated risks. But we end up investing in this program in individuals, not the nonprofits, not government.
Right.
Because
right.
individuals have a real potential to change community and to bring in new ideas and to experiment. And so our money gives them time for 18 months and a lot of camaraderie, because the other fellows really give them the support. When things aren't working well, they kind of hear them out, give them some ideas and a sounding board. They're really in close contact with each other, sharing what their progress is. But the real trick of all this is 18 months is just the seed money. That's the seed. That's the starting point. It's really many, many years later where they keep evolving their ideas and they take off. So, you know, you might have someone who starts with an after-school program. Years later, it's a whole full-blown school
right.
that's developed.
Right.
And so some of these people, you know, we've had very few people leave Baltimore, I think only 29 of them. So most of them are right here working on the very same issues, but they just get better and better all the time. And they bring the community with them. You know, they have to – it's sort of an interesting dynamic. They have to lead, but they also listen. And so for us, it's a way for us to understand what's going on in the community, what's working, what things we should be worried about, and what things we should kind of take to some different scale.
Well, it's exciting. Tomorrow's going to be a good day. We'll be there for a good part of it, and looking forward to it, and looking forward to meeting the new fellows and coming up this year, and to what comes up in the next couple of years with what's going on here, and the new chairman of the board, Bill Clark. We'll see where all this goes.
Well, thanks so much. We're
thanks,
excited,
Mark.
Too.
We good to have you all here. 15th anniversary, Open Society Institute, Baltimore. And that is it for the Mark Steiner Show today. We'll have all that information, by the way, where you can link to the streaming. Will be on our website at steinershow.org, and all the information about the people who are speaking and what OSI is doing will all be at steinershow.org. I remind you, this Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Mark Gunnery and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineer is Andre Melton. Our new intern, we want to welcome her, is to Sharia Smith. Good to have you in the studio. Good with us. At junior here at Morgan State University. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, find out information about our guests and the work they do, go to steinershow.org. You can also listen to and download our podcast now on iTunes. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Is that Lou Reed? No, it's me. Okay, well, we're not doing Lou Reed right now. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. Stay tuned for Michelle Martin and Tell Me More.
Some kinds of love, a monkey read a tortoise. Between thought and expression, lies a lifetime. The situations arise because of the weather, and no kinds of love. Some kinds of love, a margarita totem, like a dirty French novel. The absurd courts the vulgar. In some kinds of love.